from food to fun and so much more. The Joan Hamburg Show, exclusively on 77 WABC.
A new charming cookbook has just come across our desk. And, you know, we judge it. We get so many books. You know that. I can't even begin to tell you. And when we get cookbooks, we love cookbooks that have stories, cookbooks that when you open, you say, oh, my gosh, I want to make that or I want to eat that. And we're a good combination because our producer is not a cook, but she likes to look at cookbooks and decides whether or not she would attempt to make the recipes. I love to cook. So even more than the recipes, I look at them and I think, I could do this. You know, I could get home and make this. And Jennifer Siegel, who's a very popular blogger, this is, I think, Jennifer, your first cookbook?
That's right.
Once Upon a Chef, and it's got all these good recipes, at least 100 of them, and I want to make almost all of them from the Spanakopita. They're like rolls or roll-ups. So you actually went to professional cooking school, right? This is what you wanted always?
That's right. After I graduated from college, I went to culinary school, and I worked in the restaurant business for many years up until when I had kids.
And you describe you're a little person and you're in this kitchen with massive equipment and high counters and people running all around you and you're lifting tons of produce and things.
Yeah, I'm 5'2 on a good day. And I was my first kitchen job. I was the only woman and there were, I think, 35 cooks in that kitchen. And it was really a challenge, not so much because I was a woman, but I just didn't have the physical strength.
The body weight.
And also my demeanor wasn't quite a good fit for a restaurant kitchen, so it was a challenge. I eventually got the hang of it, but it took a long time. I cried every night my first week working in that kitchen.
You know what? I once got an intern job for a young woman who all she talked about, cooking, I wanted. And I got her an internship for Dan Barber's Blue Hill, a restaurant in Westchester. That kid, by the end of the day, was a puddle.
Yeah.
Crying, hysterical. I don't want to do this, she said. I physically, very small, she literally could not take it physically.
Yeah.
Very hard being a chef or a cook. Right? You're on your feet. You're lifting. People are yelling. They're running.
Yeah. I mean, and I even was fortunate because the people that I worked for were very kind to me. I think they honestly took pity on me. You know, I didn't have any crazy stories of people hitting me on the head with a frying pan or anything crazy like that. But it really is just physically exhausting. And, you know, it's super, super hot. And the orders are flying in and flying out. And it almost takes a certain type of athleticism to do that job.
Right. So it's grueling. But you say that your mom was not a cook.
No.
She didn't care. So where did the food thing come in? You don't look like you're a big eater.
So my mother, I was born in the 1970s, and my mother was actually a women's rights lobbyist. Uh-huh. We lived in the D.C. area, and so she worked, and she didn't cook almost as a political statement.
Saying I can do other things.
I'm going to do other things. And so I definitely did not grow up in the kitchen tied to her apron strings. I mean, she made dinner for us every night, but it just was more of a chore.
Right,
it
on the table. Eat
exactly.
It. Don't complain.
So I didn't become interested in cooking until I studied abroad in France. And it sounds so cliche, but I lived with a French family, and the my host mother was a wonderful cook. And I spoke very little French, so I used to spend a lot of time in the kitchen with her.
Was this high school or college?
College. It was my sophomore year of college. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen with her just practicing my French, and I started to just help her and pick up little tips.
And you started to really love it.
I started to eat really well and just fall in love with cooking. And I loved it so much that I actually went back the following year and worked as an au pair. And I was living in Paris, and again, my host mother was this amazing cook. And so it just sort of developed over that time. And as soon as I graduated college, I worked for maybe 6 months in an office job, and I thought, this isn't for me. I really wanted to do something creative, so I enrolled in culinary school.
In food. And then once you met your husband, got married, had babies, that was a big decision, especially growing up with a mom who was a feminist. And, you know, did she approve or disapprove of your decision to stay home with the babies?
You know, she definitely advised me, and I should have listened to her. I didn't, to sort of keep one foot in. You know, she said, it's great that you're going to stay home, but
once you leave,
she's like, it's so hard to get back in. She's like, try to work part time. And I think I was so burnt out at that time from working in the restaurant business, the long hours, the weekends, that I was just kind of done. And so I took probably 3 or 4 years off. And I did really struggle when I started to get that itch to
get back
to
work. What did you want to get back to?
What I really wanted to do was write a cookbook. And
you were cooking a lot during this for your family and friends.
For my kids, yeah. We had little kids, and since I wasn't working, I was entertaining.
Yeah, you were cooking.
But I started to just get that itch. I was getting a little bored when my kids started preschool. So I thought about, you know, maybe I could write a cookbook. And I actually tried. I wrote a book proposal.
And
you know, to say I got rejected would be generous. I don't think anyone even ever looked at it.
Well, I don't take it personally. It's the story of publishing.
Yeah. So at that time, my younger sister, who was still in the workforce and just, you know, she lives in New York City and she's a lot hipper than I am, she said, you should start a cooking blog. And I was like, what's a cooking blog?
How do I even do that?
I don't even know what it is. I didn't know what it was. And so she sent me some links to some popular blogs. And I thought, you know, maybe I could try that. And so I did. And that's
when I started. So you just put it up without any fanfare.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about a blog is that there are no barriers to entry.
And how did they find you?
So it started out just word of mouth. I mean, I was sharing recipes and telling my kids' friends' parents about it. You know, it was all like the preschool network. And, you know, just slowly over time, it took a long time. I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years now. My son is 15. He just turned 15 yesterday. And I started it when he was 6. So, you know, it started off with the kids' friends' parents and on the soccer field and telling people about it. And then just sort of one dinner, one recipe at a time. Food is very shareable. I think, you know, at least for me, when I make something great from a cookbook or from a recipe I find online, I send it to my friends.
And they want it.
And that's, I think, what happened with my blog.
And you started a little birthday cake business.
I did. That was actually what I did when my kids were babies.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of what I did to stay busy. I made no money. I think I lost money doing that.
Of course.
I used to spend days decorating these 3-tier
cakes
for 5-year-olds, you know, and you can only charge so much money for a 5-year-old's birthday cake. But that was sort of what I did to stay busy when the kids were little. And I, you know, I sort of realized through developing all my cake recipes how much I enjoyed that process of developing and testing recipes.
So when the blog started to catch on, and you said it wasn't overnight, it took years to really make a dent, what happened to you? Did you then reissue a proposal for a cookbook, or someone came to you?
I did. I started another book proposal because I think I just always had that in the back of my mind as something that I really wanted to do. And I got rejected again. And so that was about 5 or 6 years ago.
You rejected because they said they didn't know you and you needed
a
little
more
unknown gravitas?
Yep. And again, I really hardly anybody even looked at it. I was really feeling down about it.
Of course,
that it wasn't going to happen. And so I kind of put that aside and I started to just focus on the blog again. And in a way, I thought I was okay with it because I thought, you know, the blog really is a cookbook. It's a living cookbook.
Right.
And I just sort of moved on from that dream. I thought maybe this isn't meant to be. And about 3 years ago, I got a totally out of the blue email from a literary agent asking if I was interested in writing a book.
Who happened to come upon your blog.
Yeah. And so I was so shocked. I almost thought someone was playing a joke on me.
Right.
I didn't think it was real. And so then, you know, I started to explore the idea again. And then that's how the book came to be.
So how you have a lot of recipes, at least 100. How did you test them? Did you have a professional kitchen? Who did them for you?
So I tested them all the same way I test the recipes on my blog. I'm an obsessive recipe tester.
So you made it yourself.
I tested each recipe 5 or 6 times. Uh-huh. And then, when I announced on my blog that I was writing a cookbook, I was literally inundated with volunteers for recipe testers. So I had about 400 of my blog readers test the recipes for me once I had already, you know, finished them. And so that was really great because, you know, it's nerve-wracking to put this huge collection of recipes out there into the world. And, you know, I can sleep better at night knowing that they've already been tested by my
everyone's
readers.
Right, everyone's been testing them. And there are a lot of good recipes. We have, and I'm you obviously have it too, in Washington, Peruvian chicken is so delicious. And there are a couple of little places here where you can get it. And you have a really good recipe for a Peruvian roast chicken. And anyone who hasn't tried that is in for a real treat.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
And
sauce is the best. That's like, you could put it on anything.
Now, I had a Guatemalan friend who would make, she called it green chicken.
Oh, really?
Because she had that green sauce that she ended up putting that chicken in. But all kinds of things. Your steak salad.
Yeah, so I worked in a fine dining steakhouse for many years. I don't know if you probably wouldn't even be familiar with it, but it was called Sam and Harry's.
No, it's a very famous steakhouse.
Yeah, in D.C., and they had it was a fine dining steakhouse chain, and that recipe was from that restaurant. My old boss, Michael Sternberg, gave it to me to use in the book.
Yeah, that's a good recipe.
Yeah.
And you also have steak au poivre, which I had for the first time in years at a restaurant here that was closed and reopened, La Galoue, a French bistro.
Uh-huh.
And you forget how delicious that
is. And it's so simple to make. I mean, that's the thing, really. You know, you can complicate food. You know, there are a lot of wonderful recipes that are hard to make, but there are so many things that are so good that are actually easy. And so that's really my philosophy, is just trying to curate a collection of recipes that are gourmet but really easy. And steak au poivre is a perfect example.
Well, how did you zero in on the 100? Because it includes soup, salads, desserts, main courses, like your little spanakopita rolls, hors d'oeuvres.
So, well, I already have this huge collection of recipes on my blog. So I was trying to sort of fill in the blanks, you know, what was missing from the from the website, to try and put that in the book. And then also to create a collection of recipes that work together so that you could put together a menu, you know, from the book. So that was how I picked the recipes.
And now your kids are, you know, teenagers and getting there. But did they grow up on your buttermilk chicken tenders?
They did.
I thought I might make that. That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, that's my daughter's favorite.
And what's the secret to that one?
That one, well, I mean, anytime you marinate chicken in buttermilk, it's just
the most tender, right?
It's so tender. And that one, you know, it's just the breading, you know, putting a little, like all the seasoning in the breading, and that's what gives it all the flavor. And I pan fry it. I don't deep fry it.
You don't make it. Yeah. So it's
not a huge
easy
mess. Yeah.
Right. And what's your family's favorite?
So that would be my daughter's favorite for sure, because she's very particular and she likes kid food, you know. But probably everyone's favorite recipe in the book might be the chocolate birthday cake.
You know what? I love that too. Because it's not as hard. I just clipped a recipe for chocolate cake from one of the food magazines, but it involved many cake pans, and this is a one deal.
It's a one bowl cake recipe, which is, you know, it's not any less delicious. You know, it's no less delicious than any of those harder recipes.
Right, non-sweetened cocoa and very good chocolate.
Yeah, very simple, and I love the frosting. It's actually adapted from a Cook's Illustrated recipe. And most chocolate frostings are really tricky and, you know, they take a long time to set up. And this one is ready as soon as it's made, and it's just creamy and delicious.
Yeah, it looks
chocolatey.
It looks delicious. That's a recipe that we have to do. The other thing that I clipped was your sausage and cheddar, your pudding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great
Explain how you do that one, just roughly.
Yeah, so that one you saute sausage and onions in a skillet, and then you toss it with eggs and cream and
all kinds
hunks
of
bread,
things.
And then you let it soak overnight in the fridge. And that's one of those that you can just slide into the oven in the morning and, you know, you have brunch.
Right, it sounds good.
Ready-made.
And now we're coming into cold soup weather, and you've got an orange gazpacho. That is something I had never heard of. Orange juice?
Yeah, you know, I learned that trick from Patrick O'Connell at the Inn of Little Washington in Virginia.
One of the great places.
Such a wonderful restaurant. And my husband and I went there for my 40th birthday, and they served this cold tomato soup, and it was the best tomato soup that I've ever had in my life, and I could not figure out what was in it.
And it was orange juice.
And it was orange juice. And it's just amazing how orange juice really brings out the tomato taste. But you don't taste, you really don't taste the orange juice. It's just makes it taste brighter and sweeter.
Well, it sounds delicious. And to find you on your blog, they go to Once Upon a Chef.
onceuponachef.com.
Okay, and the book is now in all the stores, Once Upon a Chef, with 100 recipes that everyone can make and everyone can eat. And by the way, you did all these photographs?
No. Gosh,
I wish
I was that talented.
I read somewhere that you like to take your own pictures.
On my website, I do, yeah.
I mean, these are quite fabulous.
Alexandra Grabluski, she's in Brooklyn. Yeah, she's very talented.
Great job. Well, congratulations, continued success.
Thank you.
And I'm hungry. And I'm Joan Hamburg from WABC. Stay tuned.